Welcome, everyone, to another edition of SCRC's Let's Talk Caregiving podcast. The purpose of Let's Talk Caregiving is to stimulate discussion, bring awareness, and connect everyone with services over here at SCRC. I'm your host, Roberto Velasquez, Executive Director of SCRC, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Marta Rañón, Director of Government and Community Affairs.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Today, we have a special guest, Amy Rojas. She's a hospice liaison for Silverado Hospice, one of SCRC's partners out in the community.
Good morning.
Welcome. Today, we're going to talk about end of life and hospice. You know, this topic is very controversial. Our society often looks at end of life in a negative way, and we avoid it as much as we can. But it's part of life.
Yes, and I think it's not only that just the way it's viewed. I think people's emotions are also tied to this topic. And so I'm so glad we're talking about this today.
Right, and as caregivers, this is an important topic because we're caring for frail, older adults,
yes,
people with disabilities, and
it's inevitable.
It's inevitable. And at some point, as much as you want to avoid and you want to, you know, work to try to improve the health of your of the loved one that you're providing support for, you know, many conditions don't lend to improvement, but, you know, you're providing care as best as you can.
And, you know, it's interesting that even the way you said it now, the caregiver wants to do everything possible to help that person,
right,
to care for them, to offer them treatment and comfort. And so to even think about not being able to do that, it's contrary to what they want to do. It's counterintuitive, right? I want to help them as best as I can, and you're telling me they're going to die.
Right.
Then I'm not doing my job.
Right. And yeah, and so it brings up a lot of different emotions,
yes,
that a caregiver might have. So, Amy, I wanted to ask you, you know, you're with hospice, Silverado Hospice. What is hospice? Tell our audience what hospice is.
So hospice is all about giving the patient a better quality of life. It's about keeping them comfortable. We treat the person, not the disease. We want to be there for the patient and family and help them through this illness or disease process that is not going to get better.
It's so nice to have someone, I think, through that process. And oftentimes caregivers are not even sure of how to access something like that. Can you tell us how to access hospice?
So a caregiver can self-refer, or if they're the ones that ill, they can self-refer themselves, their loved ones, or they can get an order from, you know, their doctor or from SCRC, from you guys. You guys can initiate it as well.
So what does the family member or the doctor need to know about hospice? How do you qualify? What makes you eligible for a service like hospice?
So for hospice, and it doesn't have to necessarily be just dementia, it's any type of terminal diagnosis or disease, such as, well, your dementias, your COPD, CHF, your cancer. So they have to have a terminal disease, which will eventually kill them if the disease process runs the natural course. And 6 months or less is what the doctors are looking at, but that's just to initiate the referral.
So if the doctor, well, I mean, for obvious reasons, you know, when you are diagnosed with a terminal cancer, it's very obvious that a doctor will say, okay, you know, there's hospice services. But what about when somebody's dealing with an illness, a progressive illness like Alzheimer's disease, where
it's difficult to even see when the end,
right,
is.
I mean, how can they say you have 6 months left?
So for dementia patients or Alzheimer's patients, we're looking at end stage Alzheimer's or dementia. So that's if they've been diagnosed, but we're also looking at, are they going in and out of the hospital, in and out of the ER, lots of doctor visits, mm-hmm, UTIs, lots of falls, weight loss. So we're looking at all these things combined, mm-hmm, so the doctor can assess whether this patient is qualified for hospice or not.
And what do you consider, what does hospice consider end stage?
End stage. So they progress to the point where, you know, it'll be, they're going to pass away soon. So mm-hmm, we're looking at, for a dementia patient specifically, mm-hmm, we're looking at they can no longer eat. They can no longer eat like they used to.
What about transfer, walk?
that's all included, their mobility, their toileting, their incontinent.
Ability to speak
1 to 5 words or word salad. They make no sense. We're looking at sundowners. We're looking at different things, especially for the Alzheimer's patient.
So when somebody accesses hospice, what kind of service do they get?
So under hospice, they get a team, a group of people that are all, they all have a goal to take care of the patient and their loved one, right? So we're taking care of the caregiver as well.
So it's a big team approach.
Correct, correct. So they get an attending physician and their own doctor can follow on hospice as the hospice attending if they're comfortable. So that's, you know, if they're comfortable, they've had their patient for a long time, they don't want to lose their patient. And sometimes the patient and caregiver want that. So they have that option. We also have a medical director. So our medical directors are available 24/7. So if something happens in the middle of the night and our nurse case manager says, doc, we need some antibiotics or doc, we need some oxygen, we can get that working 24/7. They get a nurse case manager. So this particular nurse will be out at minimum one day a week. And then as their needs change, they can come out a couple days a week. Or something happens in the middle of the night, there's a fall or a changing condition, they can call us and we can send a nurse out. So those are unlimited nursing visits, the ones that are as needed. They get a social worker. So social workers can help with, let's say they need to apply for Medi-Cal, they can guide them through that process. If they need funeral arrangements, which they may not need now, they may not need in a month, but possibly in a year, let's have all that ready so you don't have to worry about it when that time comes.
Wow, how neat really to have a group of people working on such a difficult point of life and guiding you through that process. Because I think in talking to a lot of caregivers, that is what gets very overwhelming fast.
Correct.
Not knowing what to do, where to go, who to ask, what it looks like. And I've talked to a lot of caregivers who are so hesitant to even consider hospice. I don't know if that's something that you've encountered.
I actually run into it quite a bit.
How often are people hesitant, or what is it? What is their hesitation, you would say? Because I've heard that a lot.
Okay. So their hesitation is, one, death has been taboo for so long. So that's an issue. That if someone's on hospice, they have a disease that's going to eventually kill them, right? There's no cure for it. The other thing is, especially in the Hispanic and Filipino communities, I've noticed that they aren't really open to hospice because they feel like I'm the wife, I'm the husband, it's my duty to take care of my loved one. But yet they're losing weight, their blood pressure's high, they're not taking care of themselves, they're not sleeping because their loved one may have sundowners and they have to take care of them.
Right.
So that's why they're a little bit hesitant. But, you know, once they're educated, at least they can make an educated decision on, okay, this service is available. And they make an educated decision to use it or not use it at that point.
Right. And I think it's really interesting because, you know, the selling point of a concept of a service like hospice is very different when you're approaching different groups of people, you know, or individuals. I remember when I used to facilitate a Spanish support group in San Isidro a few years ago, one of the topics in the support group was about death, dying, and, you know, preparing for that. And not only did people, many of the people didn't have advanced directives, healthcare, powers of attorney, things of that nature. The whole idea of end of life and hospice was so, like you said, taboo. And I remember one individual, he was a caregiving for his wife and she was at the end stages. And we talked about that. And I believe we brought in a guest speaker for that support group. And one of the things, he came back several weeks later and he said he was connected to hospice now. And he really just raved about the equipment he was able to get because he was a man of very modest income. So he was just doing what he could with makeshift kind of equipment that he had in the house.
You do the best that you can as a caregiver. That's so wonderful that you had that story and that it was such a positive outcome. Because I've talked to so many caregivers where it's been a very negative experience and even hesitation. I recently was talking to a caregiver whose mother was at the end of her life, and she had about a week to live. And she was there 24/7, round the clock, caring for her mother.
Wow.
And I asked her, I said, you know, have you activated hospice? Have you talked to your physician about hospice? And her response right away was, no. Why would I do that? And I said, well, you're telling me she's in pain and she could use some of this equipment that is included and provided by hospice and a nurse that helps you and is there 24/7. And there was such hesitation because of what hospice meant to her,
right,
that she rejected the notion of even accessing hospice. And it was very sad. It's very sad to know that this service is available and she wouldn't activate it.
Yeah, I remember from a personal standpoint when my mom had cancer and it was terminal, and she we got hospice for her. And you know, towards the end, you know, she wasn't eating anymore. She wasn't opening her eyes. She wasn't doing. And, you know, here we are, here I am, you know, executive director
working
of Southern
here.
Caregiver Resource, and I'm supposed to know all this stuff. However, it was a challenge to see it from an emotional standpoint, to see my mom, who was a strong, independent, you know, matriarch of the family, all of a sudden just totally bedridden and not being able to even look up at you anymore or speak. Mm-hmm. And what I remember, and what was very beneficial for me, was the hospice nurse who would explain to me and to my siblings about the different kind of stages of the body kind of shutting down. And it made sense, you know, instead of us trying to wake her up or trying to
feed her
or force her to
yes.
say something or drink some water. It's just like, no.
It's a lot of education.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of education to know what to expect, what you're seeing, and what's to come.
Yeah,
that's what it's all about. And then going back to the equipment that you guys were talking about, if they need a hospital bed, a walker, wheelchair, bedside commode, oxygen, nebulizer, whatever it is to give them a better quality of life at home,
right.
mm-hmm. hospice can provide all of that the same day.
Oh, wow.
As well
that's
as
great.
Incontinence supplies. How many people or caregivers pay for their own incontinence
mm-hmm.
supplies
mm-hmm.
or
it's expensive.
Yeah. Or medication to keep them comfortable. Like you said, she was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Well, yes, our nurses assess for the pain, but we can also provide the pain medication. And with pain meds, you get constipated, right? Let's be truthful here.
Yes.
So you get constipated. So then you need a bowel regimen
mm-hmm.
or they're not sleeping or they've got high anxiety. So all these meds, comfort meds, are all included in the hospice benefit.
Oh, that's so good to know.
I mean, how do you start that conversation? I mean, do you start that conversation early on? Do you talk about it once you know about the illness? I mean, I guess you can go either way, but it's always a challenge to have a conversation about death and dying, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I know from personal experience with my family when my dad was ill. You know, he didn't have an advance directive. He didn't have a power of attorney. He just said, you know, hey, you guys just decide what you want, and your mom will tell you what to do.
Because that's so easy.
Yeah,
it's so black
yeah,
and white.
Yeah,
you know,
so
it's so clear.
Yeah. But it was so challenging and confusing
course,
at the end.
Of course it is.
But starting that conversation, I think, is really important.
And I think starting it before you're in that situation. When
right.
you're in that situation, there are a lot of emotions, a lot
mm-hmm.
of feelings, a lot of unsettled relationships and problems and issues. And
mm-hmm.
so having that conversation early on, way before you get to that point,
right.
About the person that you're caring for is what I often tell caregivers to do. But also on the on the other side of that is for your own well-being, for your own decisions. What do you want to do as the caregiver? And if caregivers are out there listening to this podcast, also think about you. What do you want for your end of life? What are your wishes? What do you want it to look like so that it doesn't become a complicated situation?
Right. I mean, it's just a difficult situation to be in. But I think one of the challenges also, and this is where SCRC can help, if you're connected to our services, you're assigned to a family consultant, and they can coach you through a lot of this. They can teach you how to have that conversation with the family. There's a tremendous amount of fact sheets about end of life and having the conversation, the different documents and things of that nature that are available. In fact, there's another concept, of course, that ties into hospice, and it's called palliative care. And Amy, would you share a little bit about what that means?
So I just wanted to back up just a little bit. For end of life, does it mean that they're going to pass away right now? It could be days, weeks, months, you know, as long as they qualify, every time we reevaluate, they can stay on hospice. Dementia patients can be on hospice a lot longer than some of the other diagnoses. It just depends at what stage we get them. For those patients that aren't, clients that aren't comfortable getting hospice, or it's still early to mid-stage dementia, mm-hmm. Early to mid-stage, doesn't matter what diagnosis, as long as it's a terminal one. We can do palliative. So palliative definitely is different from hospice, where you can still seek aggressive treatment. You can still see your primary care physician. A doctor will come out and do monthly visits to the home. Mm. So that way, if it's hard to get them out of the home, the doctor can come and see them. Right. And the beauty of our program is they do have access to our hospice nurses if something was to come up in the middle of the night.
Through
Silverado Hospice, yes.
And just to clarify, because I think this is also part of that taboo, outlook that people have regarding hospice. Having hospice, accessing hospice, doesn't mean that you're killing the person and that you're hastening their death, correct?
Correct. You know, there's studies out there that show they may live a little bit longer just because we're tending to their needs.
It's, you know, quality.
Quality of life versus quantity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of family caregivers experience that phenomenon of actually people extending their life and looking as if things are improving when it's related to Alzheimer's because of all the care and attention that they're getting on top of what the family member's providing, that sometimes there's a phenomenon where the person seems to be getting better for a period mm-hmm. of time. Yep. Yeah. Well,
I did want to ask just really quickly if I know sometimes people say, well, how much does it cost? How do I pay for hospice?
Right.
So we pay into Medicare, or, you know, our husband or wife had Medicare and we're using up that benefit. So we paid for Medicare Part A. It's due to you. Hospice is covered at 100%.
Right.
All our services, equipment, medication related to the diagnosis, and incontinence supplies, it's covered under the Medicare hospice benefit 100%. If they have Medi-Cal, most of the time it's also covered at 100%. If they have a co-insurance or deductible for the month, they know that up front. We always check insurance. We do accept some non-funded depending on, meaning they don't have insurance, and we don't care if they are legal or not. So we consider them for a charity case as well, and they get treated just like they had insurance. And if they have an HMO, then, you know, we check their insurance and see if they have that benefit in their insurance.
This is great. Such wonderful
it's
information.
So wonderful,
thank you
yes.
so much, Amy, for joining
You're welcome.
Us here.
It was a pleasure to be
it's
here.
It's very informative. I really hope people take advantage of this conversation.
I want to thank Marta.
Always a pleasure to be here.
For co-hosting and sharing her stories. And I want to thank Amy for joining us from Silverado Hospice.
Thank you so very much.
And I want to remind our audience that if you are providing support to a loved one, you don't have to do this alone. Asking for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. And I would encourage people to go to our website at scrc.care or call us at 1-800-827-1008. And also, if you like this podcast, you can get more Podcast Fever.
Lots more.
By going to our Facebook and listening in on other recorded podcasts that we've done. Finally, SCRC as most people know, is a nonprofit organization, and we're able to provide our services due to the generosity of our donors and community partners. So if you like this podcast or you would like to make a tax-deductible donation, just go to our website and click on the donate button. Well, I want to remind our audience that SCRC is here for you.
Caring for those who care for others.
Thank you.